Donalana Kitchen talks about food. Donalana Kitchen talks recipes. Donalana Kitchen talks about lots of other things on community radio. Welcome to the Donalana Kitchen. My name is Lana Nachtigal.
And I'm Donna Prisgintas.
We gather here once a week around our kitchen table to talk about food, farming, advice, recipes, and opinions. And we come to you from the studios of KHOI Community Radio in beautiful downtown Ames, Iowa. Ah, summer. Summer. We wait for it all year and then we complain about it all summer. So here it is. There it is.
Anyway. Oh, I saw my first lightning bugs last night.
It's summer.
Yes, and also while I was out seeing the lightning bugs, the mosquitoes started diving around my ears. So there you go.
And you'll hear about it here first on the Donalana Kitchen. Yes, I wish to report, a garden report. I have scapes, early scapes already.
Garlic scapes.
And it's kind of early, I think, but I picked them anyway. Yes, there they are.
It's good to pick them early before they get tough. Yes, anyway, yes. Lana, these look beautiful.
Garlic scapes are the first flower shoot that comes off if you plant hardneck garlic. That's how it grows. It puts up a flower. But do not, if you want to actually have really good bulbs, you break the garlic scapes off. Because otherwise all of the energy of the bulb will go into making a flower, which as it should be in the plant kingdom. But for us, we want the bulb, so we break off the flower top, the scapes, and I do not know why they are called scapes.
S-C-A-P-E-S.
Scapes.
And they're curly.
And they taste intensely garlicky. You can use
them. Yeah, I just took a little nip of one. It's not tough. That you picked them just right, of course. And they have a little bit of heat in them.
Yeah, because they are garlic. And
you can chop them and saute them. You can pickle them.
Yeah.
They're kind of cute because they curl all over.
Yeah. Actually, I pick my garlic scapes, at least the varieties I grow. This big flower buds shoots up, and then it starts to curl over. And I wait until the top is actually curled over and starts to go up again. It's really pretty, but let it grow, and then you've got a nice long stem to use.
Okay, do you, Lana? I trim them at the what would you call this point
where the flower bud?
The flower bud. I don't usually eat that.
No,
part.
Well, no, it's probably okay if it's really, really young, but it starts to get.
Yeah, the pointy end of it.
The pointy end is a little tough.
Yeah, so I usually trim that off and then either do a quick pickle or. One time I kind of tied them in a knot. Whoa. And then lightly sauteed them, still in the knot, and served it as a garnish on top of a steak. It's not a snake, sorry, a steak. They're kind of fun to play with.
Oh, what a nice idea. That's good. So, the garden is kicking in, and we did have, here and there, we got little bits of rain, and
and we might get more.
Thank goodness. Good old dry
lettuce. Oh, my goodness.
And lettuce is coming before the extreme summer heat.
Right. Ah, this is the best time of the year for the leaf lettuces, at least in this part of the country.
Yeah.
Mm. They actually have a flavor to them. just enough bitterness to really taste like they're supposed to.
Good.
Fabulous, Lana.
Well, we are going to be talking about all the good stuff of summer, and it brings to mind picnics. Donna, picnics and such. Because, we can sit inside in our air conditioning, but it's something about getting outside and enjoying. What about picnics, Donna?
Well, when you're thinking of picnic, of course, you can have a very elaborate picnic. Remember those big baskets that they used to make that came with the cups and the silverware and the tablecloth and the little funny napkins in them already?
Oh,
I don't think they do that anymore, but one could make your own, with metal plates. You know how?
Oh, yeah. It is stack up and everything.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
But otherwise, if you don't want to carry all the paraphernalia, of course, sandwiches are an ideal thing.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, handheld things, cookies, of course. I think it would not be a picnic without potato salad, though.
Yeah, right. And one should have utensils, at least a spoon.
Yeah, yeah. You need something for potato salad, a fork or something. But potato salads, that means summer to me. And you know, please expand your range of potato salads. We're not talking about the deli kind that you get. You can, like, I made one last week. There were some new potatoes that I got. So they were like less than golf ball sized and mm-hmm. had a light yellow, peel. So I didn't peel those. I just, I quartered them, I think, or maybe even smaller, cut them into a smallish, you know, but not having to peel them was quite an advantage. So, you know, there are kinds of potatoes, so you can do that. That's the peel on kind. Some, I also got a bag of russets, which I think for the next potato salad, I will peel those, mm-hmm. right? Also, you have to remember, sweet potatoes are really good at potato salad. So sometimes I either make a sweet potato salad of all sweet potatoes. Sometimes I mix them because then you get color that way and different consistencies. And there's different schools of thought on how mushy do you want your potatoes in your potato salad. You know, sometimes, and it depends on my mood, sometimes I want them really soft. I mean, you don't want a mashed potato salad, but the softer you cook them, then they tend to kind of absorb more of the dressing.
Mm-hmm.
Although some people like them very, you know, discreet bits of potato, so you don't cook them that much. So that's kind of an option. And then I've been putting, like, this last one that I made with those little yellow potatoes, I cut up some red peppers and a large dice of onion, red onion, I think I used, and I sauteed them. So I cooked them, well, not dead dead.
Not dead.
Know, but I took it until they weren't exactly crunchy. You know, mm-hmm. they were definitely cooked.
Mm-hmm.
I put the cooked vegetables in with the cooked potatoes, and then I added fresh herbs, parsley, basil, lovage, tarragon. All of these are out now, right? And any combination of those. So you've got we still have the spring onions coming up. So I kind of finally chopped the little green onions, or of course you can use scallions. So
or garlic scapes.
I would chop those really small because they have a punch of heat. Or the other thing you could do with the garlic scapes is, chop them up and then the vinegar that you're going to put in the potato salad, heat it and pour it over the scapes and let them sit for 10 or 15 minutes. So you kind of got a light pickle going on with them. And I also did, what did I put? Oh, I think I did this for coleslaw, but it would work in potato salad. I sliced carrots thinly and did the same thing, poured the hot vinegar. So the carrots were slightly pickled too.
Huh.
So you can do all of those kinds of things, you know, add vegetables because that gives it, you know, and when corn season comes, you can put some fresh corn in it, you know, just it gives it texture and more vegetables and more flavor. Now, then you come to the dressing. Okay. We have lots of options there. There's the classic mayo one, right? And of course, if you're just using mayo, I would put a little vinegar in too. Now, here's the thing. The longer the potato salad sits, potatoes, and this is true of pasta salads too, the starch in the potatoes and the starch in the pasta absorbs the vinegar. So, like, if you make the potato salad the night before, or the pasta salad, before you're going to serve it or haul it off to the picnic, retaste it because it may need more vinegar. It's like somehow the tang of the vinegar gets absorbed the longer it sits, and you need to just kind of refresh and make sure it has enough. So we used to call German-style potato salad was the oil and vinegar one.
Mm, okay.
No mayonnaise.
Mm-hmm.
Or you can do, you know, mayonnaise and vinegar and oil.
Mm-hmm.
Or this time I also added sour cream.
Which is a good addition.
Oh, yeah. So mine ended up being kind of a sour cream mayonnaise combination. So in any of the above. Mm-hmm. Now, in terms of refrigeration, the catering parameters, and this is what you follow as a professional, is once a dish reaches room temperature, which means if you start out cold, you have longer time, it can sit at room temperature for 4 hours.
Ah.
But no more than that. After that, you shouldn't be eating it because the bacteria will grow. If they won't grow as much if it's cold or if it's hot, but that room temperature parameter, if something is sitting at that temperature, that is when the bacteria grow the most. Mm-hmm. So it gives you more leeway than you think. You mm-hmm. don't have to immediately worry about it.
Well, right. And now we live in, you talked about those little picnic hampers that had the little utensils on the inside already, but we are blessed with coolers and refrigerated this and that's and
right. You can pack your potato salad with those, you know, those cold packs that you keep in the freezer, and that will keep it. It's only once it actually reaches room temperature, mm-hmm. like if you stick your finger in it, for goodness sake, and it feels the same temperature as the ambient air. You know, if as long as there's a chill on it, it's, you don't have to start counting your 4 hours. It's when it's in the range of room temperature.
Mm-hmm.
And then you know you've got to watch 4 hours, particularly if it's going to have mayonnaise or sour cream.
Yeah, that kind of stuff. It's so good to eat, but
yeah.
Be careful with that.
Yeah, it gives you more wiggle room than you think. But, of course, one wants to always not... food poisoning is no fun if you're... So you don't want to... You do want to be careful and aware of it.
Yes, good. You talked about there's so many different flavors that a potato salad or potato vegetable salad could mm-hmm. be. And sometimes, and you mentioned the classic deli salad. They must add sugar to that. I mean, it seems...
Which one?
Oh, things that you find in a deli.
Deli mayo one.
Yeah, I love the texture. It's mushy. Not all the time, but sometimes. And there's usually an egg in it, you know, chopped up. Yeah. But,
or if you can put bacon in them too,
yeah,
of course.
Yeah. But, you know, that can be kind of sweet-ish.
Mm-hmm.
Or it can get real vinegary and pickly tasting. And
well, I have
yeah,
to say, if
really
I, like when I did the carrots, the pickled carrots that I made the other night, I put, what did I use? Of course, you have options of vinegars, too. Some have a stronger, lower, more acidic. I was using, I think, rice wine vinegar, which I think is a little bit mellow. Now, if you buy the rice wine vinegar and it says seasoned rice wine vinegar, it has sugar added to it.
Oh, really?
Yeah. But I do add some sugar if I'm going to pickle like that.
Ah, yes.
I usually put salt, pepper, a little more sugar than salt. Now, you know, you don't want it super sweet,
yeah.
But it does cut the tartness of the vinegar a little bit. And so you're not going, oh, yikes.
Huh. Speaking of vinegar, I don't think I've mentioned this on the air before. I think this is something you gave me for Christmas, and I have been using it. Who would have thought? Banana vinegar.
Oh, that does not have a super sharp pH to it. No.
What a find. It's, I assume it's made out of
bananas.
Fermented bananas.
Bananas.
That, for salads, that has been a really good find. I mean, the bottle.
It's subtle.
It's really subtle.
Oh,
is that good? But, mm-hmm. So I suppose, you know, you can make vinegars out of a lot of different things. Also, I had a batch of kefir kind of go beyond its lifetime, and letting that sit on and turn into vinegar on the kitchen counter.
Made out of milk?
Oh, no, I'm sorry, not kefir, kombucha.
Oh, the kombucha.
The kombucha.
Oh, the kombucha was the one that your husband Joe made the shrub, the rhubarb shrub with the kombucha vinegar.
See,
very nice.
Things are always in flux, you know, and if you know how to grab things at the right time.
Well, what I liked about the kombucha vinegar was that it, like the banana vinegar, was not super, super acidic.
Right.
So it worked really well. Like if you are, we have talked about shrubs, which are basically fruit and vinegar beverages that sort of culturally predated soda pop, for example. It was an old-fashioned thirst quencher. And the one that Lana's husband Joe made recently used the kombucha vinegar. Now, the shrubs that I have tasted and people experiment with, I often find they overdo it with the vinegar. Mm. I like to keep the vinegar. You know, you don't want to drink it and go, oh, vinegar. No, you want that little sour to stay in the background, which means don't use white distilled vinegar. That for even in pickles, I find that because that is the sharpest vinegar. Even apple cider vinegar is a little, can be a little bit much. Usually I find wine vinegars are better for that. White wine vinegars are really easy to use. And, rice wine vinegars are often good. They have a little, they're a little softer. And so I have to say, in my pantry, I probably have 15 kinds of vinegars. There's the sherry vinegar, and then there are the homemade vinegars, which I'm just finishing up last year's tarragon vinegar, which I made with white wine vinegar.
So, there you go.
Yeah.
Yeah, all those little jars in the pantry. Because vinegar, I mean, what's it going to do? It's going to turn into vinegar. So remember, it's there. It doesn't have to turn into this dusty bottle, you can use it. And it has flavor. And potato salads are a good thing.
Yeah, like the tarragon vinegar in the potato salad was fabulous.
Now you referred to vinegar and oil dressing on potato salad.
Yeah, German style.
I'm familiar in my family with a hot potatoes, a hot German potato salad.
Oh!
Which is...
Right, another variation.
Well, which is this, but you can take it to a potluck in a crock pot, and it is really, really good. And a little bit of caraway seed in that...
Now, did your family version have bacon and bacon grease in it?
Yeah.
Yeah, that's the hot...
It's good.
Yeah, it doesn't nothing have better to, than that.
It doesn't have to, but it's the idea of a potato salad, but it is... Still hot. Well,
because the bacon grease, when it's hot, is viscous and really nice. As it gets cold, it tends to gum up a little
bit.
Like if you wanted to make a potato salad that was not hot, you would probably just put the bacon in without the bacon grease.
Yeah.
Crumble the bacon in.
Ha. Well, potatoes. I love potato salad.
I do too. And one of my favorites is, you know, when the corn starts to come in, to pull it off the ears and just very lightly cook it and then let it come to room temperature and put it into, so corn and potato salad with onions. Yum, yum, yum.
That's good.
Yeah.
That's good. Ah, sounds like summer.
We got the whole season ahead of us. It's so exciting.
So good. Well, summer food is really good, and it's a great time for potlucks too, because you really, when you think of a picnic, don't think that you have to do everything all yourself. It's keep it simple, use your fingers a lot, and so you don't have to have a lot of cutlery.
But if you're going to do a potluck, I do like to do this because. If you're doing a large communal potluck, just got to take what comes. But if you're going to have like 5 or 6 people, it's kind of nice if you chat amongst yourself and plan in advance and say, well, so-and-so can bring the potato salad and somebody else can bring the cheese sandwiches and so-and-so can make the cake or the cookies so that you end up with a whole meal.
That's good. Yay. Ah, picnics. Oh, another thing about summer. What are your latest ice cream flavors, Donna?
Oh, well, you know I love my ice cream maker. So I do have, a really heavy duty, it's the kind where it contains the freezer unit and the turning unit. So you don't have to freeze the thing. You just set the machine on the table. You push one button that makes the freezer go and the other button that makes the churn go around. So I can, make a batch of ice cream pretty quickly without a lot of effort. So boy, do I make ice creams. for this weekend, I had a bunch of younger friends over, all of whom had school-aged children. So I had like...
You had a house full.
I did. It was noisy and exciting, and there were water fights going on, and nobody got hurt, and the dog hid, and didn't want to have anything to do with it. But we had ice cream. And all of the mothers said, I said, well, can they have as much ice cream as they want? And the mothers all said, well, since Donna made it, they can eat as much as they want. So we had an ice cream free-for-all. And I only made three flavors.
Only?
Only. I started with a dark chocolate cardamom because the oldest of the children had it a few years ago and he really liked it. And I was so thrilled at the time that a 6 or 7 year old liked cardamom. It was like, oh yes, I'm going to do this for Aral again. So we had dark chocolate cardamom, which I have to say is really, really good. Now, here's the point of making your own ice cream is, of course, you can make flavors that you cannot buy at the grocery store. So I took, this recipe is so easy. I took a pudding recipe, a cornstarch pudding recipe, for chocolate pudding from one of the Alice Medrich books. So it's basically you mix the sugar, the cornstarch, and the chocolate powder, cocoa powder, and you make a little slurry. Then you add milk and cook it with cream. And I do put a little espresso coffee. I always put a little coffee in my chocolate. And then once the pudding is stirred up you drop some chocolate chips into milk. So chocolate cardamom ice cream. Yahoo! Then we've been on a rhubarb kick, right? So I cooked the rhubarb down, only since it was for children, I thought I better make it strawberry rhubarb. So I threw in a couple because the strawberries are not here yet. And according to Judy Henry at the Berry Patch, this is not going to be a great strawberry season. So frozen strawberries, yeah. So I put the strawberries and the rhubarb in, cooked it all down, and then put it through the big strainer. So I basically had strawberry rhubarb rose geranium juice. I put the rose geranium leaves in it. So it had those three flavors. Then I just mixed cream and milk in it, and then I put it in the machine. Boom! Ha! The third flavor was, of course, vanilla. I did the vanilla because some children will only eat vanilla. So I thought, okay, better have vanilla. But what we ended up was, do you remember this?
What?
Neapolitan ice cream. So when we were kids and ice cream was sold in half gallon kind of rectangles, right? There was one, we used to call it Van Chuck Straw, right? Which was Neapolitan. So you open the ice cream box container and a third of it is chocolate, a third of it's vanilla, and a third of it is strawberry. So that's what we ended up with.
What a good invention.
Oh, it was delicious.
That's fantastic. Well, you mentioned rhubarb, and I want to just put a little shout out for a new rhubarb product out here in central Iowa.
This is a very clever thing that she's done.
Yes, there's some a maker of seasonings called salt liquors that is in the area. You can find them at farmers markets and in stores.
I think she also has it. A website. Oh, yes. So I bet you can mail order these.
Yes, yes. You can go to the Salt Liquors website. And what she's come out with this year, big deal, a rhubarb sugar. Mm-hmm. Well, who would think that you could dry rhubarb and grind it down and sprinkle it on things? What a good idea. And she suggested for things on, let's see. On watermelon, on pineapple, on peaches, and also mix it with some hot sauce too. We have it is called, get this, Queen of Tarts, the Queen of Tarts. So that's salt liquors, and you can find lots of good stuff.
Oh, I'm tasting it.
Yeah,
it has that the tartness of the rhubarb, of course, with the sugar, and just the hint of the fruit. It's really nice.
Oh yes,
it's delicious.
So you can find out things that are find them at the farmer's market or go to their Salt Liquors website. It's good. Yes, it is.
Oh, we have to read the labels. She writes wonderful labels. Bow to the Queen of Pink Spring Tang. We dry the rhubarb for the Lana, my glasses aren't strong enough to read this small print. Can you read that?
It is awful tiny. Bow to the queen of pink spring. We dry the rhubarb for this sugar seasonal blend that's mind-blowing on ice cream or all these other fruits. And what's nice about their stuff? Here's their disclaimer here. No preservatives or other creepy schnitzit here. More information available at www.saltliquors.com.
And I bet since it's seasonal, we better get our supply now.
And I can't imagine drying rhubarb, but I'm going to give it a try. That's pretty good.
That's a very clever idea. Right. So what Salt Liquors.
Right. Got it.
Google that.
Ha. So you've been listening to the Donalana Kitchen, and we'll have lots more coming up. This is KHOI. And this is the Donalana Kitchen, tasty radio for the heart of Iowa. Welcome back. This is the Donalana Kitchen. That was the Barn Owl Band playing a tune called Fair Jenny. We're talking summer here. And although this really isn't a specifically summer recipe, I had a good time making it. I got a gift of a book called Gâteau, The Surprisingly Simplicity of French Cakes by Alexandro Capozzano, and I tried a recipe called Lemon Mint Cake. Donna, you have this book too.
I do. Gâteau means cake in French. And what she talks about in the book, and I couldn't resist it. I had to buy it. She says correctly that most people in France, if they want a really fancy dessert, they will buy it from a professional patisserie, which is the pastry store, right? But there are lots of simple cakes and things that they will whip up at home. And so this book is full of those kinds of really, well, tell them about this. I'm going to taste it on air again.
That's a good excuse. Already ate one.
Yeah, I know. I'm going to have my second one.
I made cupcakes as opposed to a whole cake, but I have made this as a cake. It is a lemon mint.
The mint thing is so stunning because it's so, it's not mint extract or something from a jar. This has
believe it or not, in one recipe, this has a full cup of chopped up
French mint.
And here is it has the rind of two lemons and a little bit of lemon juice. But what I want to let people know, and I made it the first time, and often you and I want to have a nice slice warm from the oven, but the mint does not really come out and hit you between the eyes until it cools off a little bit. And then all the flavors go absolutely bazonkers, and it's really good. So it's a recipe for a cake, but it's summer, so I made cupcakes. Cupcakes are good. And there's lemony powdered sugar frosting on it. Okay. And they don't shy away from butter and cream, which is very good.
It's
this has one cup unsalted butter, and light brown sugar.
Mm-hmm.
Beat and really big on following the recipe, or beat it until it's light and fluffy.
I have to say, as a recipe writer, she's very thorough in her instructions.
I mean, I'd probably dump all this in. Don't dump it in all at once. Take this step by step and beat it you go. Add 4 large eggs, one at a time. 1 1/2 cups all-purpose flour and 2/3 cup almond flour, which I think is really good. First time I made this cake, I didn't have almond flour. So in my way of, oh, well, what's on the shelf? I put in coconut flour, which is, coconut flour is fine, but somehow it kind of dried out the cake and made it a little too substantial for me. But this second one is good. So, 2 teaspoons baking powder, 1/4 teaspoon salt, 1/2 cup cold milk, and, whole milk, grated zest of 2 lemons, and yes, truly, 1 cup fresh mint leaves, and my garden happens to have lots of good mint this time
of
year.
Well, now there's the question of, what kind of mint?
I try to go for my tastiest, strongest. And I, like I told Donna, I got on the internet and was looking up pictures and varieties of mint. But mint is one of those things that it can cross breed itself, and it kind of comes and goes. Whatever is good in your garden and is the best right now. I have apple mint, which I also learned was called Egyptian mint, which is fine and prolific, but not necessarily super tasty. But I also have something that I got from my friends Mike and Pat, so I don't know what it's called besides Mike and Pat's mint. And I have another mint that is very, very, very my strongest mint, and I got it from Helen. So we have Helen's mint.
Helen's mint, yes, it does have a nice, one has a good edge to it.
Just go out there and taste, and really, truly, it is.
She says, any mint is fine here, but lemon balm, grapefruit mint, mojito mint, and orange mint, also known as bergamot mint, are all a bit less boldly sharp than spearmint and peppermint and carry a citrusy aroma that highlights the generous dose of lemon in both the batter and the icing.
I'm going to play around with more stuff.
Yeah.
I have lemon verbena coming too. That might
You could put that in with the mint a little bit too.
This sort of seems like it would open up the possibilities for stuff. And when the recipe said a cup of finely chopped, I mean, you got to chop it up quite a bit.
That's a lot of mint.
That's a lot of mint.
It's not like loosely packed. That's a lot of mint. I think that's kind of, and you can taste it in the cake. It's really, really nice. I'm going to do it too.
And
good find,
Lana. And you see little green things in there, but and then it does. The first time I made it, I just served it with ice cream, so I didn't put an icing on it. But you can do a butter, confectioner's sugar, and 2 tablespoons lemon juice for a quick frosting, and that's good too because who doesn't like frosting? So instead of like thinking of a cake for a picnic, using cupcakes.
Handheld.
Yeah, it's good.
Yeah. Oh, these are really delicious.
Well, I got this as a gift. Thank you. Thank you, Megan, for this book. Gâteau. And I'm working my way through the.
Spell gâteau for us. Because.
But it's got, G-A with a little gnitch on the top of it. G-A-T-E-A-U. Gâteau.
Gâteau
by Alessandra Crapazzano, The Surprising Simplicity of French Cakes. And
there's a lot of cakes in there.
Oh, well, we won't run out of things to do. So you may hear some cake recipes from me in the future. It's the kind of thing I kind of like to fool around with. Yes, I do. Cakes, very good. I know what I could do. Mention something, another little bit of summer. We've been talking about picnics and food and recipes. There's also the sound of summer is
mosquitoes.
Oh, mosquitoes. And mowing the lawn.
Yeah.
Somehow when you're mowing the lawn, it's okay. When your neighbor's mowing the lawn, it's really annoying. Why is that, Donna?
I don't know, but you know what? My wonderful neighbor, Walter Anderson, is now refusing to use a loud, noisy. He got out the old-fashioned push kind. Yep.
Get that schnitz. Oh,
I know.
Very good.
That's a nice noise.
Good. Well, that is a sound, and what we tend to want to take control of our acreage and mow everything down. I don't know why we do that, but we do. Here at the KHOS studio, Mike, our station manager, said we were going to have a no-mow May, and he just let things grow because this radio station is in a wonderful old house in the old town part of downtown Ames, and it's got a yard, it's got flowers, it's got bushes, and it's got a little bit of a lawn, and we were gloriously let things grow, but he got out of his electric lawnmower and attacked things. So yes, we have mowed lawn here. Well, I'd like to play a little bit here from the Donna Lana Kitchen archives. We did a little bit of a fun thing. We did a radio play. Cookie Crumb Theater presents Thoughts on Lawn Care, a dialogue between God and Saint Francis.
Francis, you all know about gardens and nature. What in the world is going on down there? What happened to the dandelions, violets, thistles, stuff I started eons ago? I had a perfect no-maintenance garden plan. Those plants grow in any type of soil, whisk down drought, and multiply with abandon. The nectar from the long-lasting blossoms attracts butterflies, honeybees, flocks of songbirds. I expected to see a vast garden of colors by now. All I see are those green rectangles.
It's the tribes that settled there, Lord. Mm. The suburbanites. They started calling your flowers weeds and went to great lengths to kill them and replace them with grass.
Grass? Grass? That's so boring. It's not colorful. It doesn't attract butterflies, birds, and bees, only grubs and sod worms. It's temperamental with temperatures. Do these suburbanites really want all that grass growing there?
Apparently so, Lord. They go to great pains to grow it and keep it green. They begin each spring by fertilizing grass and poisoning any other plants that crop up in the lawn.
The spring rains and warm weather probably make that grass grow really fast. That must make the suburbanites happy.
Apparently not, Lord. As soon as it grows a little, they cut it, sometimes twice a week.
They cut it? Do they bale it, like hay?
Not exactly, Lord. Most of them rake it up and put it in bags.
Ah, they bag it. Cash crop, do they sell it?
No, sir. Just the opposite. They pay to throw it away.
Now, let me get this straight. They fertilize grass, so it will grow. And then when it does grow, they cut it off and pay to throw it away.
Yes, sir.
These suburbanites must be relieved in the summer when we cut back on all the rain and turn up the heat. That surely slows the growth and saves them a lot of work.
Well, you aren't going to believe this, Lord. When the grass stops growing so fast, they drag out hoses and pay more money to water it, so they continue to mow it and continue to pay to get rid of it.
That's nonsense. At least they kept some of the trees. Oh, what a sheer stroke of genius, if I do say so myself. The trees grow leaves in the spring that provide beauty and shade in the summer. In the autumn, they fall to the ground and form a natural blanket to keep moisture into the soil, and they protect the trees and bushes. Plus, as they rot, the leaves form compost to enhance the soil. It's the natural cycle of life.
You better sit down, Lord. The suburbanites have drawn a new circle. As soon as the leaves fall, they rake them into great piles, and again, they pay to have them hauled away.
No. What do they do to protect shrub and tree roots in the winter and keep the soil moist? And I'm confused.
Oh, after throwing the leaves away, they go out and buy something which they call mulch. They haul it home and spread it around in place of the leaves.
I'm going to regret asking this. Where do they get this mulch?
They cut down the trees, grind them up to make the mulch.
Enough. I don't want to think about this anymore. St. Catherine is in charge of the arts. What movie does she have scheduled for us tonight?
Oh, let's see. It's Dumb and Dumber, Lord. It's a really stupid movie.
Never mind. I think I just heard the whole story.
You've been listening to a presentation by Cookie Crumb Theater, a small production of Donna Lana Kitchen. You heard Lana Noctegal as St. Francis and Doc Anderson as the voice of God. Yes, a little bit from our archives there. Doc Anderson is part of this community quite a few years ago, and you could find him at the farmer's market juggling and doing balloons, a magician by trade.
And the voice of God.
And the voice of God. I mean, have that on your resume, and you are good. So think about that when you're mowing the lawn, and don't mow it too often, and it's okay to let it grow. I promise. Really, you can. This is KHOI, and this is the Donna Lana Kitchen. You can find out more about the Donna Lana Kitchen by going to this station's website, khoyfm.org. You can get this and many other fine programs by streaming, or you can go to the archives. The Donna Lana Kitchen has a web page there. You can go to khoyfm.org, go to the talk section, find the Donna Lana Kitchen, and we have archives and we have recipes, and there's a picture of us, and you can just find out more than you ever wanted to know about us. So very good, very good. And recipes, there's recipes for the summer.
Right, I was reading about Bernice's really good rhubarb dessert, and you've made this.
Oh, I make that many times because it's easy. I'm not even much on crumbles and fruit this and that in a cake pan. This one always turns out crunchy and yummy. I like it a lot. So that's one of the good recipes you can find there. It's a good one.
And Lana's very good with desserts, so I take my cues from her.
I got it from an Ames resident named Bernice Donovan, who is no longer with us. But what better legacy can you leave than a really good rhubarb dessert? There's other good recipes on that page. Think of things for summer. And another rhubarb thing, there's a recipe for rhubarb orange jam, which is another good summer kind of recipe. Good things on our webpage. Oh, also, we have a podcast available now. Donna, how do
we do? The program that you hear on the radio is then same content, but if you want a different format, you just go to wherever you listen to podcasts and you put in Donna Lana Kitchen, and Donna Lana is one word, DonnaLonna Kitchen, and you will find us in your podcasting ears.
Very good, yes. Our mothers did not know each other. We ended up Donna Lana spelled just ever so cleverly, so there you
yes,
go.
Yes, some karmic accident, I think.
Huh, very good. Well, we have some more stuff here. I ran across a book. And I shared it with Donna. And I got this book at the KHOI fundraiser book sale that happened.
Used book sale. This is an old book.
It's an old book, and it was fun.
Let's see what the publication date was.
It is called The Food of a Younger Land, written by Mark Kurlansky. And he's written other books about food. He wrote the book Cod. He wrote the book Salt. And he didn't so much write this book as collect it. The Food of a Younger Land deals with the food in this country, long about the turn of the last century, up like through the 20s and 30s. This is
before grocery stores.
Before grocery stores.
Well, national chains of grocery stores.
And before widespread electricity and refrigeration. And people who did eat back then, really they did, but the idea of food was very regional, very local, very seasonal, because
things, you had to grow it, a lot of it yourself.
Yeah, and you just couldn't, like, toddle on down to the grocery store and get things. So what this book is actually, Mark Kurlansky, like I said, didn't exactly write the book except a lot of commentary on it. This was actually a project of the WPA during the Franklin Roosevelt administration, where money was given to artists and writers and musicians. And one of the projects that was started at that time was collecting the history of food recipes throughout the country. And people started sending in recipes and sending in comments. So this book is kind of broken down by areas of the
regions,
country.
Yeah.
And now, the reason you probably haven't heard of this project is Pearl Harbor happened, and all of the WPA projects kind of were put on hold for a while, and this project was a long ways from done. People had sent all of this information in, but it never really got put into a larger format or into a larger book. So some of the recipes are kind of, or some of the, they're not all recipes.
They're different writers,
yeah.
Some are better than others. And so this was published in 2009, finally. On the cover it says, A Portrait of American Food Before the National Highway System, Before Chain Restaurants, and Before Frozen Food, when the nation's food was seasonal, regional, and traditional. It's from the Lost WPA Files. And it's a hoot to read.
Yeah, it is. It's fun. And actually, we'll probably be,
Excerpting. Like I was looking through it last night. There's a very short tale from Nebraska on when the men get together and eat the, well, we used to call them Rocky Mountain oysters, but, you know, they castrate either the pigs or the sheep or the cattle, and they eat that part, the testicles.
Waste not, want not. There you go.
Right, but it was a very funny story.
Yeah, so there's a lot of regional things. And here's just one little paragraph. I think we shall be returning to this book occasionally just for reminding us where our culinary history comes from. This is about eating a possum.
Oh, yes.
Uh-huh. And this is a recipe from, or not a recipe, this is a little remembrance from Polk County, Arkansas. It is unacceptable in the South to begin the word opossum with a vowel. Possum is a Southern food with the name of Algonquin origin, meaning white animal, though gray would be more accurate. The American species is native to the woods of the Southeast and Northwest, but mostly eaten in the South. Even in the South, it was only popular in poor rural areas, mostly among black people, because it was a nocturnal marsupial and slaves could only hunt at night. Oh, aren't we just the best people? Okay, when cornered, an opossum pretends to play dead, which is known as playing possum. Yes, they really do. Yes, they really do. Like poverty, opossum dishes are less common in the South today than at the time of America Eats. That was the name of the big project. But they remain emblematic for people recalling their black Southern roots. Yes. Here. Possum and taters. After catching the possum, before you go to bed that night, scald the possum with lye and scrape off the hair. Oh, my. Dress it whole, leaving on the head and tail. Rub well with salt and put in a cool place overnight. When ready to cook, put in a deep pan with 1 quart of water. Place 3 or 4 slices of breakfast bacon reverently across his breast.
Breakfast what?
Across his breast.
Bacon?
Bacon. Breakfast bacon.
The bacon will make anything taste good.
Okay. Put that in. Put it in the oven. When half done, doesn't say when, this is what it says. When half done, remove from the oven and stuff with a dressing made of breadcrumbs, onion, salt, pepper, and possum juice taken from the pan. Return him to the pan. Place around him peeled sweet potatoes and bake until light brown, basting frequently with gravy. There you have it, a perfectly usable possum recipe. Oh,
I bet they don't have that in The Joy of Cooking. I'll have to look.
They do have a game
they have
section.
They have some
I don't
game, but
now see,
know
but we have
possum.
It here. Like I said, in future,
right? Probably because it's too southern. The Joy of Cooking is more Bostonian.
Oh yes, yeah, a little higher and higher up the social. What we think of as these
well,
things.
Slightly different climate. Also,
yes, another room. Like I said, we'll bring you more of these bits of wisdom from The Food of a Younger Land by Mark Kurlansky. I want to mention a prairie plant. Carl Kurtz is a local prairie enthusiast, farmer, wonderful photographer and naturalist, and he puts things out on the internet every now and then, and he has kind of the featured thing of the week. And the featured thing of the week this week is golden asters, which is a lovely prairie plant that is just going bonkers right now. And the Latin name for golden asters is Zizia aurea. Zizia aurea, named after a German botanist. Zinn, and why it turned into Zizia, I don't know. Zinn is his name. And aurea means gold. It's one of the first prairie flowers in the spring. Covers large areas with wonderful yellow flowers. It is a member of the parsley family and is an important pollinator plant. So three cheers for golden Alexanders this time of year. And also I want to mention that Mustard Seed Farm, which is a wonderful organization here north of Ames. They do a lot of outreach, and they are growing prairie plants. And you can find them at the Ames Farmers Market, and you can talk about prairie plants with them and actually purchase some and get a prairie going.
Put them in your garden.
Put them in the backyard.
Have to be out somewhere else growing. They can grow around your own house.
And you don't have to mow them.
Yeah, and we have the right climate here for them.
Yes, yes. So the Mustard Seed Community Farm is also open to volunteers and people that want to come out. So Mustard Seed Community Farm. I think Carl Kurtz is having a field day.
He is. He's having a Practical Farmers of Iowa field day at his place where he has a beautiful prairie. He's talking, I think it's about pollinators or something. And it's July 19th, if I'm correct.
Very good. So get out.
You can find
see.
That on Practical Farmers of Iowa Field Day Events calendar.
Yes, very good. Let's see. Oh, also there's, it's summer, so there's lots of good things happening. Roosevelt Summer Sundays is happening in Ames, and lots of people like to get their blankets and go and listen to music outside.
Yeah, we like live music all over Iowa.
Yes, it's good. It's good. Oh, the band shell downtown Ames.
Yep. Mm-hmm. Home cooking and live music.
Yes, how nice. I want to also mention this month, June, is at the local food co-op, Wheatsfield Co-op, in here in downtown Ames. They have a program called Change for Community, and at the checkout counter, you can help support KHOI, this fine community radio station, by putting your change
rounding
in the
up.
Jar. Rounding up. And rounding up on your purchases, the money will go to a really good cause, this community radio stations. This is good. So we've been talking about picnics today, and Donna, of course, waxed eloquent about ice cream.
Oh.
We could talk about that for a long time.
I think I was born eating ice cream. Probably my first food, you know.
Probably. That's good. That's good. We talked about mowing the lawn, or not, prairie plants, and the book Gâteau by Alexandra Capozzano. What a good book. I'll make more cakes. You've been listening
to... I'll make more ice cream.
Oh, good.
There we go.
We're quite a pair, Donna. You've been listening to the Donna Lana Kitchen. We come to you at live at noon on Tuesdays. We're repeated 7 p.m. on this fine radio station or anytime at khoifm.org. My name is Lana Noctigal.
And I'm Donna Priskintas.
So pack up a picnic and enjoy the summer. We had excellent engineering by Mike Murphy. Eat good food and enjoy life.